Welcome into another edition of the Hockey Show Extra Ice Time podcast. It's Ryan Johnston along with Billy Jaffe.
Very formal. Let's get it out of the way. What the hell, man? Skip the formalities.
Well, I have to make sure everybody knows who we are first.
And if now they're tuning us in, they know.
Well, and now the question is, what the hell? What are we doing here? Game 7 coming up on Wednesday night.
Well, we're in the playoffs, obviously, and we understand. You have to understand that crap like this happens, unfortunately.
And I think Bruins fans understand that because we've been through it before.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's just not how you thought. You know, if it was a 2-2 series and 3-2, then 3-3, that's one thing. But then it goes from 3-1 to now 3-3. I think that's what's got everybody up in arms. And understandably so, in the sense of, wait a second. We get it. You didn't win the one game. But now you're going to win game 6, right? And it wasn't like the Bruins, again, had, how many times have we said this, not a bad performance, but it wasn't just good enough. That's the concerning situation.
Well, it's weird, you know, because throughout the course of this series, going into the series, we expected it was going to be a long series. We sat here in episode one of this and said we both expect it's going to go 7 games.
Right.
This is not how we expected it to get there, but it did. These two teams are a good match for each other. I still feel, even though the Bruins have lost the last 2 games, I still feel in my heart they are the better team in this series.
But do you think they're going to win?
I have to think they're going to win.
Well, I do too. I have to think they're going to win too, just from the sole perspective of 3 in a row over a team that, what, they lost 3 in a row once this year? Maybe twice? One, you know, 3 in a row over a team that has been the better team, 3 in a row that has the more experience, 3 in a row against a team that, when it's all said and done, just looks better. 3 in a row, though, I can't tell you. I can't tell you it's not going to happen, though. And I'm not starting to sit on the fence because that's that, you know, easy thing to do. But, I mean, the way that Toronto is playing carefree hockey right now, the way that Toronto played in the third period was really good of game 6. Really good. That concerns me. Now, then again, the Bruins did a really good third period in game 4 in Toronto. Remember that?
Sure.
And then they still go and lose game 5.
Well, and look, that's why it's so important when you get the opportunity to close out these series, you have to do it, which is why in game 5, I felt like, you know, the first half of that game was so disappointing because here you are on home ice, you have an opportunity to finish it out, and you let the team hang around instead. And look, we saw in the second half of that game how good the Bruins can be when they're really going. But where was that for the first 30 minutes?
Well, that's the big question. You know, and the thing of is this series, if the Bruins lose, will come down to game 5, first half, and response goals allowed by Bruins after scoring, how quickly the Toronto Maple Leafs respond. In my opinion, those are the turning points, or maybe the wrong term. Those are major indicators for Toronto's success. Game five, first half, they were good. They were loose. They were ready. They were having fun. The Bruins were doing anything but those things. And then the other thing is, throughout the series, the response goals by Toronto. Are you kidding me? In game 6, 35 seconds. Are you freaking kidding me? That can't happen. That just can't happen. You cannot allow for that stuff to happen when you're up and you get momentum. You're sitting, whether you're a player, a manager, whatever, you know, a coach, whatever. When you're sitting on a bench, whether you're playing freaking men's league or you're playing in the NHL, and a team scores within 2 minutes, 3-5 minutes even of when you've scored, you sit there and you're like, oh, damn. And you might not have that overt reaction because you never want to show your angst. But you better believe it that Bruce Cassidy is sitting there saying, what in the blankety, blankety, blank do you think? What is going on? Because that changes the entire tenor of a game. So first half of game 5 and the response goals have been unbelievably telling right now for these last few games in the series.
All right, so biggest thing to stand out to me, other than some of those points that you just made, is the top line has gotten a ridiculous amount of chances. And, you know, the first couple of games, they were what we expected them to be. They're one of the best lines in hockey, if not the best line in hockey.
Yep.
They had 20 points in the first two games combined. And since then, it's not like the chances haven't been there, but the goal scoring hasn't been there. Why? What has happened? Is it just snake bit all of a sudden? Are they gripping a little too tight? Did Toronto figure something out? Is it Frederik Andersen? Is it all of the above?
It's easy to sit there and say in game six how they, I thought, started looking for shots instead of taking them quickly. I thought, you know, Pastrnak, we started seeing a little bit through the leg stuff. And, you know, Marchand had the best opportunity in the first period when he rifled it five hole. It was an interesting five hole. I was on Toucher and Rich earlier, and I call it a Trefilov. I don't remember the goalie, Andre Trefilov, yeah, or not. I was with him with the Chicago Wolves organization. And he used to do this one-leg bent kind of side thing. He looked like Mr. Bean, too, by the way, on the side note right there. Treff's a great dude. He used to go on road trips with just a toothbrush, one of those guys. We go, hey, three-day trip, Treffy, what do you got? Where's your bag? Ah, I don't need. I got my toothbrush. You know, I mean, that's it. And then he'd have the trainers do his gear, his grace. That was it. Anyways, so Treff would go to one knee to the side. And Freddie Andersen did that similarly. He didn't go to a classic butterfly on that shot. Marshy still picked it, but it hit the top of his pad, and it just flicked out. Just went away. That was the best one. But the top line, when they're on, it's immediate. It's, you know, maybe they're almost a victim or guilty of having too much success of these pretty plays that lead to these pretty goals, and then they're going to keep doing it. Screw that. Shoot the puck, especially on the power play. Especially on the power play. What did they have last night? One chance? One power play shot? I don't know. Is that right? We got other guys. We got Matt and we got Ty in here. They're going to come on a little bit. We got started late, folks, all right? A little technical difficulties in this wonderful world of ours here. So you have to hold on a few minutes. But holy smokes. So, all right, they're nodding their heads. Thank you. One power play shot. I'm awful with numbers. You'll remember. You'll know that. But anyways, shoot. So the top line, it's like, you know, when you're younger, remember you went to the bar, you always had that one buddy, you'd be like, how the hell did he do that? Meaning when the bar's closing, he's finishing, right?
Sure.
He's willing? He's putting the extra effort in? He did something a little different too, right? Took the, you know, finish, he finished. Meanwhile, the guy with the good head of hair and all the teeth and everything, he's going home alone, right? Because he didn't do enough. Got to do something different come playoff time, man. You got to think outside the box.
All right. Well, to that end, we saw Bruce Cassidy shake things up a little bit.
A little bit
last night.
Yeah.
Moving Rick Nash onto the third line seemed to work for him. I thought Rick Nash actually had a pretty good game last night.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Wingles on the David Krejci line, I wasn't feeling that at all.
That was a road move right there. If they are home, which they're going to be in Game 7, as we all know, you put a different player in. Because then you can protect them, or you can't protect them as much at home, on the road as at home. So I fully expect, and I know you're going to get to this, either Danton Heinen or Ryan Donato to be in the lineup, assuming health, right?
Mm.
And Tommy Wingles to come out. That to me is a road move because you say, all right, wait a second, certain matchups, we get a heavier guy. And I like Tommy Wingles. I like Tommy Wingles an awful lot. I think he's better suited for third or fourth line.
Well, that's saying he's not a second line guy on
right.
this team.
And I think that impeded Krejci just a little bit, obviously, in the game. Yes. See, to me, the thing with Rick Nash, I don't remember what he had last night, but he had 32 total attempts through five games coming in. 32. And I believe it was 18 it hit the net, if I remember correctly. 18 hit net, and then 14 coming into game six had been either blocked or missed the net. So a lot of people frustrated that he hadn't scored at 5-on-5. You know, he had the power play goal. And I get it. I actually don't mind Rick Nash's effort. But again, does he have to find a way to finish? Yeah, he does. It's like the rest of the team the last couple of games, he has to find a way to finish. But I thought he was jumping. He is so physical in that game one. We haven't seen that play, and maybe he needs to get back to that a little bit more. He had three hits in game one, and since then, I think he's had three combined in that time since then. So he needs to get back to that. But I do think that there's going to be a change for game seven, and it will be either Donato or Heinen coming back in because it's home, and you can maneuver, massage the lineup more that way.
Well, look, and Donato's going to get... he's already gotten just in the, you know, we're recording this on Tuesday morning and it started even during the game last night. People are asking for Donato. Why isn't he playing in this series? you know, and again, I guess the question that I would have is, you're going to put him in the lineup? Okay. Where are you going to put him in the lineup?
Well, if you take Wingles out, you put Nash back up with Krejci. You do that, and then you, in theory, you have DeBrusque there. Now, you could move DeBrusque and or let's whatever. We'll call it Wingles Donato. So we'll call them Winato, okay? you can move Winato up and down a little bit. I my guess is you put them on the left side. You start them on the left side with Riley Nash and Backes. That's my guess. Now, if you feel like you need to protect certain things more, you move them around. Here, the question comes down to this. On the power play, which has not produced, with given the chances and it needs to produce more, again, that's where you could make a big difference. Do you think Donato or Wingles is better on the power play?
Well, Donato, but I also question, you're going into a game seven. Historically, you're not going to get five power plays
in
this
game. Well, that's what I'm saying, one or two. If you think who's better, and if you're comfortable saying, I'm only going to play one of those guys 10 minutes, let's just throw that number out there. Do you say I get more? Now,
that's what they did. The one game Donato played, he had like nine minutes.
Or whatever, right. I'm with you, but if you feel that you could potentially use his finish out there, and while the fact is, Danton Heinen had a pretty damn good rookie year when all said and done, but yes, he struggled down the stretch to produce. It just comes down to a feel thing. Do you feel that you can get that magic hometown boy moment? Or do you say, you know what? I know what I get out of Danton Heinen. I probably get more versatility out of him. And I, as far as not age, but as far as NHL experience, he has a little more than that. Then you lean towards that. Here's the good news is that you have, what do we have, about 36 hours until the game, right? 7:30 faceoff as we sit and record this. The bad news is you only have 36 hours to make that decision. So, and you don't get to see if one of these two guys does anything in another game before it. All they're going to do is have practice on Tuesday afternoon, and then it's the game. If I had to make a guess, purely uneducated, not having been at practice yet, not having talked to coaches, and I'm not a real overly analytical guy. I like him. I look at him. But this is a taste test, a smell test on this one. It's one game. So my guess is right now leaning towards a Donato, but that's just that could ask me in a few hours and that could change.
I mean, look, if I'm Bruce Cassidy, I know people are going to question. If you go down and Ryan Donato doesn't play in game seven and you go down because your team isn't scoring and he's potentially could add a little bit of punch to that, I get it. But at the same time, I got one more shot at this. Like, I'm putting my best four lines out there, and I'm not sure that Ryan Donato fits in that mold right now.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I guess you hope two things. You hope that Wingles can. I'm sorry. You hope that Heinen can re-elevate his game to where he's more impactful. And you sit there and you say, okay, what is going to calm my line the most? What is going to calm my lineup down the most? You don't want to do anything too dramatic. Now, is bringing Donato in dramatic? Could have a dramatic flair ending to it, right? But is it dramatic? I don't know. The other thing is I'm concerned about is Riley Nash on that line and getting him going. He didn't look, to me, he did not, I mean, his faceoffs weren't bad in game five. What, he played 13 minutes or so? But in the third period, Corrali jumped up. And that's another thing, too. Get your four lines going. Get your four lines. That's what made your team special. Get your four lines going more. I think when you get guys sitting on the bench, Babcock talked about this in the game where all the penalties, game five where all the penalties were, you know, his guys were freezing. He said, like, ice fishing, you're sitting there freezing. Why anybody would ice fish? And I like to fish. I don't think it would be anything I'd want to do.
I did it once. That was enough.
Yeah. By the way, the only thing more frustrating right now for me than this Bruins situation are the allergies kicking in. Oh, my
It's that God. Time of year.
Oh, I know it. I was fine until literally this morning and then or last night. I started feeling like crap, so sorry for all the snorting over here.
Well, while we're on the topic of Donato, let's bring in Matt Doloff. I forgot your first name there for a second. Matt Doloff, 98.5 The Sports Hub, because he's got a piece on 98.5thesportshub.com about whether Donato should play in Game 7 and what impact he might have if he does get in the lineup.
First of all, I can't believe we're even in this spot right now. We're talking about a Game 7.
It's the playoffs. Why not?
Game 7 in the first round.
You know,
and
just
here
after
we are.
That Game 4, it felt like this thing was donezo, and, you know, it felt like they were going to.
All right, well, it's a lesson learned because it's the playoffs.
Exactly.
Right? Columbus was up 2-0, and
they're done.
And they're donezo. Right. So, anyway, I mean, I had the Bruins winning this in 7 originally. Did you?
Yes.
I'm looking at RJ.
Yep, that's exactly what I predicted.
I had them in 6.
You had the Bruins in 6. What about you, Ty?
6.
Had them in, we all had them winning, so maybe we're all schmucks. Maybe not.
Find
maybe
out Wednesday
we're all
night.
Smart.
I mean, just on the Donato thing, I was on the other side of it for most of the series. You know, I know that guys like Tommy Wingles can do a lot of little things that Ryan Donato can't do at this stage of his career. You know, he's a 21-year-old rookie. He's got 13 games under his belt, but you're so desperate for finishers at this point. And once I saw Tommy Wingles going into that top 6, I started to think, you know, it might be time to give the kid another shot. And well, I do understand the idea of maybe putting Danton Heinen back in for Game 7 because maybe the message has been received because he hasn't really shown you a whole lot this series. And, you know, maybe he takes it back up a notch. But, you know, I think it's time to at least give that some serious consideration.
They're giving it serious consideration. Well,
in your piece, you had some of the numbers from Game 6, shot attempts and things like that. That mm-hmm. I mean, it showed, like, the Bruins, if you look at the attack zone time in that game, I mean, it was dominant for the Bruins. Then the shot attempts were dominant for the Bruins. They just can't get the puck in the net.
Forget finishing. We know they're not finishing. I don't think that they're getting Freddie Anderson moving enough the last two games. Now, I give Freddie a lot of credit. He looks like good Freddie, right? There's Freddie from, you know, there's bad Freddie, good Freddie. And Freddie Anderson, when he moves, not even laterally, but it's footwork thing. He's doing the good slide right now. He's powering up. He's big. I talked to one of his old goalie coaches, and he's loose on rebounds when his body control especially leans forward. I'm using hand signals here, and that doesn't help. We're on radio, we're podcasting here. But it's a forward thrust thing that he gets himself into, and he starts doing snow angels or, you know, front face plant, so to speak. And that's when you know you've gotten him beat. And it starts with his feet sometimes. Remember that Krejci goal? What was it? The power play goal in Game 1 or 2 or from the side of the net where
the
Freddie
deflection?
Anderson. No, where he banked it off Freddie Anderson. He slid mm-hmm. it. And Freddie Anderson didn't get over. He had choppy feet footwork. You've got to try and see if you can get Freddie Anderson into that same type of mode. He's off angle shots and footwork stuff. But when he's big and strong, how many times in Game 6 did he come out, power himself up, and be big? And the Bruins shot right into him.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, like they've had a huge advantage in shot attempts in the last two games. I think it's 162-82. And last night it was 62-33, I believe. But when you go to the high danger scoring chances, which is, you know, around the net in the slot, 9-6 Toronto. You know, it's just these aren't high quality shot attempts. This is why I think, like, Corsi can be a little misleading sometimes.
Well, that's why. Which site has those high danger things?
It's called NaturalStatTrick.com.
Right. Okay. So they now again, you're trusting them to determine what is a high danger chance.
Yeah,
they
lay it out for you pretty well. You know,
I have a few buddies that I go to on certain things like that, and sometimes I go to the team, go to the assistant coaches, and I ask them what were the scoring chances, and they tell you. And sometimes they're in their eyes, they're different. Remember, and just as a reminder for folks listening out there, a really good scoring chance doesn't mean that they hit the net with anything, by the way.
Right.
It doesn't mean sometimes the Wingles play last night where the puck went off his stick, he didn't corral it. That is a high danger scoring chance.
It's a chance. You're
that's
in
a
the
great,
position.
Right, to position to score, but that's not considered a shot on net there. You know, this is an easy thing outside looking in, but as from a player's perspective, and again, you know, you don't want him overthinking, but I would start considering a little pump fake on Freddie Anderson. I would. I'd try and pump fake it and see. Give it a little different. You know, I mean, we saw a few times last night where they got it. They got into lock and load mode, and again, he came out. Easier said than done, but pump fake. See if you can get the footwork going. Just get the happy feet going. Try it once. See if you can get that. Open him up.
I like the idea of trying to make him make that first move, but I also think they've been really hesitant with their shots in the last couple games. I mean, Game 5 especially, you see Torey Krug, you know, hesitating for 2-3 seconds, and then Nazem Kadri dives in front of the shot, and that's the end of it. But
well, that's the other thing. By the way, in the regular season, Toronto Maple Leafs were the fourth or fifth fewest team blocking shots.
Yeah.
They have grown. They have done some, you know, I give them credit. They've done some good things in Game 5. And how good were they in Game 6 in the third period?
They've absolutely blocking taken shots. That to another level.
Yeah. They have. They've found some good cojones, man. They've done it, and they've I tip my hat. I still say the Bruins are the better team. It doesn't matter, though, in playoffs. Better teams don't always win.
Well, this is why you need to stay out of Game 7, because it comes down to one game, and anybody can win one game. How are you feeling about Game 7, Matt?
Not great. And, you know, I'm not – I wrote another column on 98.5thesportshub.com about, you know, the recent history in Game 7s. I think it is fair to go back to all those Game 7s because it's still the same core going back to 2008, you know, Char, Bergeron, Krejci, those guys. I think it is on them to play better than they have in these recent Game 7s. But, yeah, you know, if they can rekindle the magic they had in Game 1, then, you know, I'll feel better about it. And you got to feel good about the opportunities they've been getting. But, like, how many periods are we going to go saying, you know, they just got to finish? They just got to finish. I feel like it's been like 12 periods in a row where we're saying, you know, they're getting a lot of opportunities. And,
yep.
And I just feel like last night was the night where they had the opportunities. The quality wasn't quite there. And I feel like they, especially the top line, got really sloppy in that third period, overthinking things, trying to get too fancy. I remember Pastrnak, I don't know if this is in the third period, but Pastrnak had this toe drag move that took him all the way behind the net.
Yeah.
And like, you know.
No doubt about it. We were all, you know, throwing things at the TV at that point too.
Right.
Yeah. You want to embrace it, shoot it and everything. I'm going to find a positive though from that game. I thought Bergeron looked really good. And he started getting his shot from the slot, and he hadn't been doing that nearly enough for some other games. I personally thought that he's always Patrice. We know that, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I thought, though, he looked, to me, dominant. I do, and I'm going to take that as a positive. I'm finding it. You know?
I agree. Yeah, I like Bergeron last night a lot, too. I think they had their best opportunities when he was in the middle of it, and they were getting their cycle going and all that, and I think they lost their opportunities when it was Marchand and Pastrnak.
Yeah.
Making ill-advised passes, ill-advised, you know, dangle attempts.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But especially on the power play.
But I've been begging, hoping, praying, whatever, to the hockey gods that Bergeron gets one of his patented middle-of-the-ice shots, you know, whether it's a bumper on the power play or just off the cycle in the middle where he's worked so hard at that release on a snapshot. And he did last night.
He had a couple of those.
And what was he on faceoffs? Like 400 and, you know, it was unbelievable.
He won 23 out of 27 or something like that.
And for the first time in many games, they have faceoff plays going based off of his faceoff wins. They hadn't been able to do that in the last couple of games. Yes, there were still some blocks of their attempts, but I thought that was great. So I'm trying to say, okay, let's hope that can translate to Game 7 goodness as well. Here's the thing. I thought Center 1, Bergeron, was excellent. I thought Center 4, when he didn't play enough, I thought, and Corrali, I thought he did his job again, too. I need 2 and 3. I need to see Krejci and Riley Nash. Riley Nash, to me, I know he did well in faceoffs, but he didn't look – he didn't have the impact that I need to have.
No, yeah, I agree.
All right. Matt Doloff, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Appreciate it. We'll read your stuff on the .com, as they say.
Guys, I hope we get to do this for another couple of weeks at least.
At least. All right, while you're on the subject, while you're talking about the face-offs, and Bergeron was tremendous when he got the opportunity, what the hell's up with the linesman?
The linesman were definitely...
Drop the puck.
Yeah, I know. The league, no doubt about it, reemphasized the set on face-offs coming into playoffs, all right? They always do. There's always an emphasis on certain things come playoff time that the referees, the officials, all of them have... whether it's memos or calls or whatever, on the crew that gets picked, guys, let's make sure we're this, 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 and this. Watching the slash on the hands. Well, we've seen some marginal ones and some good ones, but we've seen a lot of those. Let's be tighter on icing. With regard to linesmen, also, let's be tighter on faceoffs. Let's reestablish that. Now, they're being very, very, very careful. I'm seeing the linesmen talk even more than they did during the season. They don't want to have to give a penalty to somebody.
Yes.
I'm seeing them talk and have, it's like a bedtime story. Hey, keep your skates here. Come on, don't do this, don't do that. And then we're seeing very passive second face-offs for sometimes because we've seen one or two guys get kicked out and they don't want to give a penalty to the net, right? But it's the first one that they're being adamant on. And where they're really getting guys, where we're seeing repetitive stops or changes are after the puck has been dropped. Meaning they're like, all of a sudden it's one, was it twice last night Bergeron won the face-off and they blew the whistle both times. Well, no, face-off violation. My key is this. take your time if you have to, if you're an official before. But before you drop the puck on that one, you make sure that everybody is set. Because now you're talking milliseconds and millimeters
right.
that they're off on. And what they're doing is they're seeing, and I was going to get up to describe it. And again, I'm forgetting I'm not on a visual medium. but they're seeing more skate infractions than anything else. They want the skates to be... They got to be at the tees or not. They can't have one outside of them and turning and coming into the faceoff dot at all. And they're stopping a lot of faceoffs based on foot positioning, a skate positioning.
Do you now? You said this is a league wide thing, and we've seen it in other series. But with the focus on this series, and Mike Babcock made mention of it the other night.
He sure did.
He was pretty ticked off about one of the faceoffs the Bruins won, and you know it goes on TV. So, well, there's a way we drop the puck in this league. Do you think his working of the officials has entered into it? Because again, it has. I've seen it in other series, but it maybe not to this extent, or maybe I'm just hypersensitive to it in this series.
Maybe, right? Yeah. I've watched a lot of other series, but I can't tell you I have focused on that as much. I've seen guys get kicked out, yeah, for sure. Now we have some pretty aggressive centermen in this series too, so that could be part of it, jockeying for position. I do think that Babcock's words at times can have influence. I mean, you know, we always say that we want referees not to, you know, we want them to be robots. We really don't. I still think you need personality in the game, by the way. That's just my take. But I think that they can take it, and they might. And by the way, after every game, supervisors, officials are talking about this, and they give reports from one game to the next. So if you're a linesman, if you're, you know, Linesman Johnston, and you say, hey, Jeff, your next game, you know, just, you know, if I even wanted to call you, which I don't know if I would, but just be prepared. You know, this guy's been doing this or whatever. You're on the lookout for it. They may have had a little impact on it, but here's the one thing I'd say. They've been pretty consistent in this whole series with how they're handling it. So, you know, who knows? Who maybe not. How's that for a crappy answer? I went from maybe to maybe not. I mean, but Babcock has influence. He does.
Of course he does. Yeah. And look, he's considered widely one of the best coaches in the game. He's very well respected. He's going to when he talks to the officials, they're going to listen to him. Now it doesn't mean they're going to follow everything he says.
Right.
But they're going to pay it a little bit of attention, and if it's in their head, you know, especially after the goal the other night that he was bitching about, then
watch faceoffs. Hey, you know, everybody's saying watch supervisors, hey, watch the faceoffs, etc. They may. You might.
All right. We have to do our requisite Tuca segment because
you want to bring Ty in for Tuca.
We can bring Ty in for Tuca. Ty Anderson, mm-hmm. the newest member of the 98.5 The Sports Hub crew,
chugging, biggest Tuca Rast defender probably in the market,
chugging a Coke. I like it at 9:45 in the morning. Yeah, you're a health nut.
Listen, I had to be in the studio for TNR at 7 a.m. and I was like, got in and I was like, wow, that's a lot more tiring than I realized. So needed something to keep going. No sugar, though, I guess. Probably some other chemicals in there.
Tuukka Rask obviously was not good in Game 5. He admitted that and took the blame for it. Although, you know, I will say, you know, there was a goal or two definitely that was, you know, you'd like to see him make the stop on. There were a couple that, you know, it's going to happen. In Game 6, he gives up two goals, right? You have to win a game in the playoffs, and your goaltender is only allowing two goals, especially with some of the saves that he made in that third period. There were three of them in the space of maybe 4 or 5 minutes that saved the game at that point, and his guys can't score at the other end.
Yeah, it's a super frustrating game. I think the biggest reason for me is, you know, the two goals he surrenders, I think the first one is a disaster because that miscommunication probably shouldn't happen this time of year, all things considered. And then, you know, the second, if Marchand clears, it's no big deal, you know, but he doesn't. And then you're talking about a dangerous play, you know, you want to come up with that save, whatever. But he gave you a chance. For 33 minutes, he gave you a chance. And it's frustrating, I think, when you look back on it and you say, okay, you had all these chances in the first 30 minutes of the game, and then they just evaporate in thin air when the goalie's making the saves at the end. You know, so you can look at it and you can look at the two goals and say, okay, I wish he had those back. But he did everything he could to keep you in that game, I think, when it really mattered. And for whatever reason, you weren't getting shots on net. And so it really is a mixed bag with Tuukka. I think Game 5 was not a good game for him, as you said. The Bozak goal was the killer for me. I think you need a save there, especially with the way you were charging at that point. But game six, I think that second half, he really did everything he could except score a goal for your team.
I mean, I thought that even the second goal that he gave up, I mean, as you said, Marchand maybe could have made a play there. But,
first of all,
but otherwise, Marner, it was a hell of a shot, I thought.
It was. Backhand shots like that don't have to be the hardest, but quick release. And we always talk about no definitive point of release. Sometimes, as a forward, when you score a goal like that, you're like, oh, that was a good shot. I didn't know it was really going to go in. But you're just like, you're just zipping it. That's what you're doing in that moment. You're getting, you're turning. And Marner, by the way, he's been their best player all series long. He is, you want to talk about a good story, a local kid. Under significant pressure, that just like Pasternak, same attitudes. Like, hey, what pressure? I'm playing hockey. I'm having a great time in Toronto playing hockey. Kid is impressive. So he gets that shot off, and I've seen so many of those type of backhand goals go in where you're like, how did it? But when you realize it's inside post, and you're realizing the quickness with the release of it, and the goaltender's just on the backhand of your blade, they don't see it as well. I've talked to goaltenders so much about this; they just don't pick it up as quick. And I was clean. So that happens. But also, by the way, and this is about a break in the play. I mean, Bergeron gets the puck in the corner. He rims it all the way around to try and alleviate pressure. Okay. Then it goes all the way around. And then Hainsey gets to it. Hainsey's trying to go cross the ice. And it deflects and it goes to the middle of the ice. And that's where if Marchand could have just reached and been a little stronger, he gets it. Okay, but he doesn't. And who was it? Krug, I think, that had already gone to an area. I mean, so the next thing you know, there's this quick shot. I first goal, I'm not happy with. When it's Tuukka, Chara, and Charlie on the ice, fine. All right. That second goal, I don't look at it and say, that's your anybody. It's just one of those things where, not for Tuukka at least, I'm like, you know, if Marshy could have gotten it, and if there had been layered defense, then that play doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
And that's sort of the thing, I guess, is that you've hit this point now in the series where these mistakes, they just feel like they're doubly damaging because the guy at the other end's pulling miracles, you know, out of nothing. And that's been a big thing. So it feels like, it feels a little bit like that Canadiens series in 2014 where you make one mistake and it's the back of your net. And it doesn't have to be on one specific player because typically it's on all five guys, six guys that are out there.
Well, last night, and the goal ended up getting overturned, but basically, it was two turnovers, two goals. I mean, it's like you make a mistake at your own blue line, it's going in the net. And that it has had that feel in this series. And you know, and we were talking about it earlier, the Maple Leafs' ability to come back right after the Bruins have scored a goal, and some of it has been that. It's just as simple as you score a goal, you let down for, you know, a few seconds, and all of a sudden, you know, they've evened the score up again, or they've jumped back into the lead, and it's been, you know, that's been doubly frustrating to watch this as a fan because it's just every little thing has been, as you said, magnified.
Yeah, I actually looked this up last night because I was curious. The Leafs have scored a goal within 2.5 minutes after a Bruins goal five times in the series, and they have 16 goals this series, 33% of the time. They're scoring a response.
It sucked. It sucks because it takes so much life out of you. You can sit there and say, it's okay, boys, come on. You know it. You're sitting there like, oh, my. Can we not feel good for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Can we please, like, not feel good? And Bruce Cassidy's got to be saying, are you kidding? Like, expletive, expletive, expletive.
You look at his face, he's just chewing his gum harder because he doesn't know what else to do in that situation. He wants to throw things, but he knows he has to be the cool guy behind the bench. He has to reflect the team, I guess, in a way. But it's one of those things where I looked at that and I got like 30 seconds. And you need it. You need the lead for more than 35 seconds. You need it. It's just in that building because the longer that game goes with you holding a one goal lead, the more doubt creeps into their heads. Mm-hmm. And it's just when you let up these goals, I mean, even when you do it in Boston, it just deflates everything. You look back at when they got that power play goal. I think it was that for the power play goal that Bozak came right back down, and it was like the building just went flat again. It was like, oh.
Well, that was the, you know, it when they went on to that power play. I tweeted, like, this is where the game turns, right here. It's like it about halfway through the game, you're getting a power play chance, you haven't played well, all of a sudden, boom, you score, crowd's into it, they haven't really been into it yet, and you're right, 30 seconds later, it's like, oh, you know, you're
that's going to be the story of this series if they lose. It's going to be the amount of response goals and, you know, and not being able to finish. I mean, it seems pretty obvious. Doesn't take a hockey analyst to tell you that. But the response goals are killers. They're crushers. And you can sit and say, I'm repeating myself all along, oh, no. BS. When those goals happen and the crowd, and that's the thing is in Toronto, because the crowd was as amped up as it was there, but all of a sudden Bruins got the goal and there's this feeling of, oh, and, you know, with everything that went on in Toronto yesterday, the traumatic event, you know, they're looking for that. And you want to talk about that extra shot of espresso? I mean, they got it with that response goal. And just like the Bruins fans lost it the other night, you're referring to in game five, you want to talk about sitting down on their hands on your seat, or when you sat down on your seat, your hands under you? I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, come on.
So what do you do to stop those response goals from happening? Is there a line that you turn to in that scenario?
Well, it's easy to sit there and say, put the fourth line out there. But, again, I don't have their numbers in front of me. But, through the rotation, where are you at? I thought when they had the who did they have out last night? They seemed to have a – I mean, they had gone through. They score the goal. Krejci's line scores the goal. DeBrusk scores it. And then wasn't it the Riley Nash line that was
– I feel like they were getting deployed in some of those situations. I mean, I would have to go back and look it up. I mean
– I'd like to see a little more –
I was trying to track face-off. People can throw out a face-off, see how the final number was.
Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more – I know it's on the road. It's harder. I'd like to see a little more four-line. I would. I'd like to see a little more four-line. Now, I get early on in the game, Bergeron's line, and I even said this when I was marking the game, you know, watching it on Ness and working it. I liked what Bruce did early on when Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak were dominating. He was getting him out there in offense's own faceoffs, coming out of breaks, et cetera. I'm like, good, good, good. But once you get into that other rhythm of the game, get to four. Go to four. If you really trust that four line, go, 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 go. Yeah, maybe that fourth line is the line that you put out there. But maybe that's an analysis that needs to be gone through. Who's been on the ice for these response goals? And what's made the difference? You know, has there been a common theme?
Do you guys think Charlie McAvoy is okay? Because, I mean, look.
I take him at his word that physically he's fine, but I don't know if he is hockey fine.
Well, part of what's standing out to me is that he's fallen down a lot in this series. With nobody around him just, you know, going to turn or skating backwards, he's just fallen down. The first couple of games I thought, okay, maybe he's got something wrong with his skate. Mm-hmm. But it has continued, and I'm wondering if the knee isn't just giving out on occasion. And in addition to that, obviously, his play hasn't been – he doesn't look like the same guy. The explosiveness isn't there. You know, when he's going for a loose puck, it just looks like he can't find that next gear.
The word from talking to coaching staff is assertiveness. It's not the same assertiveness that Charlie McAvoy, a.k.a. Chuckles, you know, Chuck as they call him. I mean, what a good player. What a great player. It's not that same level of assertiveness. What does it come down to? Is it physical? Maybe. I mean, maybe he feels fine, but he just doesn't have – he might even not even realize he doesn't have that strength back in that knee.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is to your point, is he in game shape? You know, is he truly timing-wise, is he all there? I mean, he came in late in the year, and he jumped right back into meaningful games. And I know that, listen, they're all meaningful at the end of the year, but had the Bruins had a greater lead, I think it, you know, would have been easier to say, okay, you're going to jump into this game, we're going to manage you this way. But he jumped right back into it. They were fighting for first place, fighting for seeding. You know, I don't know if he truly had the moment where he can be like, okay, I'm going to make my mistakes now, it's going to be okay. And is this that moment? If so, that's crappy timing, we all would agree. But what are you going to do? I mean, you got to play through this theoretically. He's too good to take out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. He's too good to slide down, I think.
How do you slide him down, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't really have the personnel to do that.
No, you don't. And, you know, I had one fan write in asking about why Nick Holden isn't in the lineup. And where could you play him? I mean, you're not taking Charlie out. Duh. You're not taking Kevin Miller out. Duh. Are you taking either then McQuaid or Grizz out? You're not taking Grizzlick out.
No, you need him in this series.
Yeah. So it comes down to McQuaid. And it comes down to, you're going to play Holden on the right side with Grizzlick. And what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing differently? You're taking one of your, truthfully, I mean, Adam's done a nice job killing penalties.
Yes.
He's done a nice job. Now, he hasn't played, what, 10 to 13 minutes.
That's the problem.
But
Is that he seems like he's falling out of the rotation at certain times. And, you know, I think it was towards the end of game five. You didn't see him out there for the final. It felt like it was 15 minutes, basically, the entire third period. You rarely saw him out there. Well, at one point, they went with Krejci on the point for an offensive zone draw,
which I didn't mind it either.
But
I liked it.
It speaks to the whole thing that, you know, if you can't run Krug and and McAvoy out there, which they were doing in the third, which I loved, by the way. I loved they did it in the preseason. They bring it back now when they need a goal. But it's a real thing that you kind of need one of these guys to chip in with some more offense in these late situations. And, I mean, Holden, I liked him in the beginning, but my confidence in him kind of faded towards the end. I thought he saw some of the warts in his game.
Remember, you bring a guy like that in, you bring in another guy, especially if you bring a different forward in, which I'm convinced that they are. Especially Holden, he hasn't played much. So now you're bringing him in, throwing him into Game 7, and on the one hand you're like, well, this is what we do. On the other hand, you're like, this is a tough ask. And especially if you're bringing another guy in like a Donato, if it is Donato, then you got two guys that you're parachuting in that haven't played much of the game situation.
Yeah, and my whole thing, too, is I think there's something to be said for, you know, you live and die with the guys that got you there. You know, for the most part, Holden did not get you there. And Donato, great towards the end. Did he get you there? I don't know. Heinen, he hasn't shown me much of anything in this postseason, but I really want to know if there's something more there because he responded well the last time you scratched him.
Yep.
He came out, he played with some energy, played with some emphasis. I would like to see that again, but these are the highest stakes possible right now.
Yeah. My Tuesday gut is that Donato slides in. By Wednesday, I might be convinced that it's, you know, last night, again, I was asked right away, and I thought Heinen. I did. I thought Heinen right away. You go with what you know, and you go with a guy that gives you that versatility a little bit more, in theory, right?
Yep.
Talk to me on Wednesday, and I'll have a better idea.
Yeah, I think the big thing, sorry, but not to interrupt you, the big thing that I noticed with Heinen is I feel as if he's heard footsteps when Roman Polak is around, whereas DeBrusk has embraced the challenge. And I think that's been a big difference when you watch that third line go out there versus that second line. DeBrusk goes right in. I feel like Heinen, he hears Polak coming, and he kind of backs off a little bit. But that's just how I'm seeing it. I don't know if you guys see it.
No, I mean, you could see it in, like, DeBrusk in Game 6 gets into a little dust-up after a whistle. Huge smile on his face. Like, he's enjoying this. He's feeling it in this series.
Well, there's a reason that David Backes has been going at Roman Polak, his ex-teammate from the St. Louis Blues, for about 4 or 5 years to try and continue pushing back against him. Backes and him, I don't know if they're great friends or not, but I guarantee you they're buddies. Backes hasn't cared. I mean, he's gone. I still don't know why Roman Polak, and I know, I'll tell you what, though. I'll go back to the play in the game. I thought Backes should have gotten an elbow for hitting Freddie Anderson in the head. And then Polak comes in. And it allows himself to get engaged in that dust up. And I'm sitting there saying, you know each other. You know David Backes here, Roman. You know he's trying to literally bring you into the fight. What are you doing? Yeah. Stay out of it.
Stay home.
Stay out of it. Now, all of a sudden, I'm still shocked that the Bruins didn't get a penalty, a minor differential there. I'm shocked. Can't figure that one out. Regardless, as I go on my diatribe, I'll finish here. My point is that Polak, I wasn't impressed what he did there. Is Heinen hearing his footsteps? I don't know about that, but I just think Danton, he's got the cerebral game way of his game. Walls, pucks above him, et cetera, et cetera. To your point about Jake DeBrusk, when Danton is flowing and not waiting, that's when he's at his best. He just needs to go.
All right. We got only about 2 minutes left. Ty Anderson, 98.5thesportshub.com. Appreciate you stopping in. Welcome aboard.
Sounds good.
Good to have you with us. All right, Game 7 coming up Wednesday night. We've talked a lot about lineup situations and what they might do.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to throw this out there because I put out the hashtag extra ice time last night. A couple of quick questions. Someone kind of going back to the Vancouver series back in the finals says, heard during that series, you can't hit what you can't catch, and Boston found a way to incorporate more physical play. He wants to know, is this Leafs team too fast to out-muscle?
When they get on transition and stretch, yeah, they are. They're too fast. They're in that regard. And the game doesn't – we don't have certain things in the game that allow you to do that. Now, we weren't hooking and holding. We had gotten rid of obstruction in theory in 11. But that Vancouver team wasn't what I would call – I'd call fast, but I wouldn't call them a speed demon team. This team, throughout their lineup – and especially the way that Babcock has added Kapanen and added Janssen into the lineup, they're fast. And if you allow them, and we showed it on Nesson last night, the Bruins 3-4 times, even in a good first period, we're still backing up to respect the speed. If you allow them from center to blue line to get going, you can't hit them.
But ultimately, I feel like the Bruins had done a decent job adjusting to that. We saw the stretch passing come into play a lot in the middle part of the series.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a better job of adjusting to that. I think ultimately, for me, Game 7 comes down to doing the work. You know what? Doing the work. Get bodies in front of Anderson, disrupt him all night, and you know what? And out-hustle. Because that's been the big difference in this series.
Remember in the first couple of games we talked about where the Bruins put the puck on the forecheck? They hammered away, especially below the goal line where they dominated, and especially the right D of Toronto. They dominated that area. They got to get back to that. No more between-the-legs stuff. No more hesitating, trying to, you know, ticket, you know, the shot to a certain area. I mean, get it on net. Come out of the corner. And I go back to the first period. I thought the Bergeron line, we showed it, did a beautiful job of cycling. They were beating them off the cycle. More of the lines need to get involved in that. Perhaps get your fourth line involved a little more, too, in the tenderization process of the Toronto D. It's about winning wall, going to the front, and it's about finding a way to finish. Pretty obvious. But get Freddie Anderson moving. Straightaway shots, you're going to have a hard time beating him.
All right, that's another edition of the Extra Ice Time podcast. We'll be with you Saturday morning for the hockey show, and hopefully we're back here again next week during the series against Tampa Bay.
You got to think you're going to. If you go into it not thinking, RJ, you don't screw it up, brother. Don't say hopefully. We're going to.
Nope, fully positive.
There you go. Because we have a lot of impact on the outcome of the game.
See you next week.